Hello and welcome to another weekly edition of Popcorn Optional, a movie podcast where we talk all things movies. And this week, in anticipation of The Force Awakens, not The Force Awakens, we're reviewing The Force Awakens in anticipation of The Last Jedi being out. We're reviewing The Force Awakens, which came out 2 years ago. Hard to believe it's been 2 years, but my name is Cameron Salina, and tonight I'm joined by Jake Brown and Trevor Allison.
What's up?
Hello.
Like I said, we're reviewing The Force Awakens. We're going to do a couple news items, another segment of honorable mentions, talk the Avengers Infinity War trailer, and then we will do our content of the week and get on out of here. But let's go ahead and get into news. And I think this is not going to come as a surprise to anybody, but Disney has decided to remove the Olaf's Frozen Adventure from Coco starting December 8th.
Oh, praise the Lord. God is good. Yeah.
They made this decision, you know, a few months too late, but sure.
Yeah, I still don't understand how I thought it was a good decision. I'm surprised it took them that long. I just listen to our last episode if you want to see how I feel about the Olaf short film. Spoiler alert, not great. It was not good. So, yeah.
Yeah, not good. So... Happy they're doing it.
Is that happening only in the U.S. or are they doing it everywhere?
Well, so the Olaf's Frozen Adventure was already removed from screenings of Coco in Mexico. And then in the U.K., Coco doesn't actually come out till January, but they wanted the short to play before Christmas, so they just re-released Frozen with this in front of it. So I think it's still playing on that if you're in the U.K. or Europe.
What a bizarre distribution model. We have a 21-minute seasonal short we want to show people, but what we're going to do is we're going to release it on the front of a re-release movie that's 3 years old.
What I don't get is why they didn't just put it out for like as a movie in like foreign countries, like as in like make a DVD of this and it'll sell like hotcakes.
Yeah, or just like play it on the Disney Channel. Like, Disney has so many modes of distribution for this, like Freeform. So I just don't understand who made the decision we'll put it in front of Coco.
They could fire up the marketing machine and show this on like the Friday night before Christmas on Disney Channel, and they'll like double their normal time slot viewership.
Yeah.
The thing that's made me the most angry is the fact that this robbed us of a Pixar normal short, like a 2-3 minute short. And that's the part that gets me the most. Like, I think of Piper, which came out last year in front of Finding Dory. And that's just the most adorable thing I've ever seen on the screen ever.
Yeah.
So we got robbed.
Yeah. The one with the volcanoes, the lava one. Oh, man.
Oh, yeah.
That's better than most rom-coms, and it's like 6 minutes long.
Or the one where the kid and his dad and grandpa are putting the stars up at night.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Luna classic.
Yeah, that one. Oh, there's so many good ones, too. I mean, we could go down a list, I'm sure. We could probably do a whole episode just reviewing Pixar short films. But we have other things to get forward to. Get forward to. I don't know why I'm having all sorts of trouble talking tonight.
Let's get forward.
Get forward to something else.
Yeah.
It's like Streets Ahead. We're Streets Ahead.
What?
Anybody knows that reference? No.
I don't. Mind.
All right. Never mind then. I'm going to just stop. We're going to end the podcast here tonight. And hope you guys like Star Wars The Force Awakens.
Pop, pop.
You stole my tagline.
Yeah, well.
No, it's not yours.
Oh.
Oh. Wow. Whoa. I messed up. Magnum, please forgive me.
Yeah, there you go. Are we legally allowed to use that?
I texted Dan Harmon, and he was like, you know,
okay.
Listen.
Yeah, you're good.
Listen, no one who owns any kind of intellectual property rights cares enough about community to have a problem with it.
That's the truth. Although, did you guys see that they're coming, like, Dan Harmon announced, like, we're doing a movie, we just need to find a time to get everyone together, but, like, we have a story together, we just need to kind of, like, finalize some script things and find time to get everyone together.
Oh, yeah.
AKA, get Donald Glover there.
I am ready to be disappointed in that movie. I'm ready
what? Six seasons in a movie. The movie's going to be great.
The amount of movies that haven't been made because they haven't been able to just find time to get everybody together is a staggering amount of movies. That's like the most important part.
Do you guys want a community film if Donald Glover's not in it?
No, because when he left, it sucked.
Yeah, Donald Glover, he's not necessarily even the main character, but he holds the whole thing together.
Yeah.
Troy and Abed at the movies.
Troy and Abed everywhere.
Would I prefer like monthly Troy and Abed shorts over a movie? Yes. Yes, I would.
Oh, yeah. That's an idea right there.
Yeah. I'm excited. Have you guys ever watched the sixth season?
I've not yet. I'm trying to catch up on... I'm rewatching all the rest before I watch it. It kind of got lost in the shuffle, but I'm getting to it.
I just started rewatching it too, and I realized that the sixth season is on Hulu. So I'll be able to actually watch that for the first time, which was the Yahoo season that they released for some reason. But they purely released that season strictly because they were like, six seasons in a movie, we have to do six seasons and then make a movie. That's the only reason that season got released.
So as a person that tries to make movies, mostly I just make like little short films, commercials, but like with the aspiration to make movies, let me just making something because you said we're going to make six seasons of it is generally not a good idea.
Educate me a little bit on why that's bad.
Well, you see, it's kind of like Lost, being like, we're going to make all these seasons, but we have no idea what's happening next episode. That's a problem.
Can I bum you out about something completely different but related to Lost?
Always.
So the way that Evangeline Lilly...
You can always bum me out about Lost.
100% of the time, I'm bummed out about Lost.
So Evangeline Lilly, who is Wasp in the Marvel Universe, in Ant-Man, that whole side, she came out and said that the Marvel Cinematic Universe, post-Avengers Infinity War Part 2, or Avengers 4, whatever they're calling it, is a lot like Lost.
Oh, no.
Is that not the greatest way for someone to ever describe something?
That's kind of confusing, though, because they're like, I've heard they've already planned like the next 20 movies.
Oh, yeah. They have movies planned for like the next 7 years, which is
our best. Maybe nuts. She means that everyone gets stuck in an alternate reality.
Trevor, it's purgatory. We're not going to get into this argument right now, though.
I didn't mean about, I meant like the whole scope of the island, not what happens in the stupid last season.
Mm. Yeah, maybe. That would be a nice way. Look, here's a spoiler alert to anybody who's not caught up on Marvel Comics and read every weekly blah, 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 whatever. But here's Marvel's plan, more than likely. They are going to reset the universe somewhat after Avengers 4. Now, whether that's they kill off like the main... Avengers like Captain America, Tony Stark, Thor, because their contracts are up, or they alternate universe it and bring them back as other people, is a whole different subject. But they are going to reset somehow. So I think the alternate reality thing's a great idea for how to do that.
Maybe she means that Kevin Feige is handing the reins over to Damon Lindelof.
Oh, no. Gosh.
You get out of here.
I like Damon Lindelof.
I'll get out of here.
I think the hate has gone too far.
I think it's gone way too far. I think Lindelof has a whole lot of talent, and people use him as a scapegoat anytime there's something remotely that they dislike in anything that he's involved in.
I'm interested for his Watchmen series, if that ever actually happens.
Who? Do you want to know who's interested in being in the Watchmen series?
Me.
Leo DiCaprio.
I'll be in it.
John Cena. Do you want to know who he wants to play?
The comedian?
Dr. Manhattan.
Oh.
You know, that's possible because Dr. Manhattan has like no emotion.
Yeah.
So.
But every time that he just like transports into a location, they have to play John Cena's theme. He just transports in. Yeah, exactly. That all right. Well, we're way off topic. But let's this just okay. I'm gonna listen back to this episode and just be like, let's watch the rabbit trail that we follow and we just go
just
down this hole.
That, like, how the hell did we get here?
Anyways, does anybody know the most rented movies on Redbox? Well, now you do, because they've released all of the lists of, ever since Redbox has been out since 2002, what the most rented movies are of the past 15 years on Redbox. And I think if you gave me 100 tries, there are some of these movies that I would not guess as the most rented movies on Redbox. They released the first 15, and it's just, it's insane. I'm going to run down the list really quick, and then we can talk about it. 15 is White House Down, 14 is Divergent, 13 is World War Z, 12 is The Hunger Games Catching Fire, 11 is Captain Phillips, 10 is The Wolf of Wall Street, 9 is Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston's Just Go With It, 8 is Grown Ups, 7 is Flight, 6 is The Heat, 5 is We're the Millers, 4 is The Avengers, 3 is Identity Thief, 2 is 21 Jump Street, and number 1 is The Hunger Games.
That actually doesn't surprise me. The Hunger Games doesn't surprise me that much.
The Hunger Games doesn't surprise me. Two Adam Sandler films surprises me.
I think I have enough thoughts on this to fill an entire podcast.
Ooh.
let's get into everything about America.
I've only seen three of these movies. The only one that I could have guessed out of like 100 guesses would have been The Avengers. It's the only one that I would have... I may have could have gotten to The Hunger Games, I guess. Interesting thing here is that neither of the last two Hunger Games are on here, which means that, you know, it really did, that series fizzled out in a big time way.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing here is the big takeaway from this is that television marketing works. Maybe not to get people to the theaters, but to get people to the Redbox. These are all movies that had lots of TV spots that I remember seeing very frequently. And as an excuse for the Adam Sandler / mediocre comedies on here, I think that people are willing to take a risk at the Redbox. They aren't at the movie theater because of cost.
Yeah. Well, this to me just verifies Netflix's whole like investing in Adam Sandler shtick. Because, I mean, clearly there are people out there that still want Adam Sandler movies. Like, I'm curious if Ridiculous 6 had been released in theaters and then on DVD, if it would be on this list. But the most frustrating part of that is the fact that Adam Sandler is actually a really good actor who just gets lazy and does these bro comedies with his friends and cashes in and takes vacations.
With poop. They always involve poop. Too much poop.
Poop or urine or some sort of comment about a woman's physical looks. There's always some sort of like slow motion shot of a woman, either.
Go on.
No, it's just ridiculous. Like, we talk about Michael Bay over sexualizing women. Adam Sandler.
Yep.
Does it just as much,
but equally offensive way.
Yes, and this is coming from somebody who grew up loving Adam Sandler. Like, I grew up watching Big Daddy and Mr. Deeds and Happy Gilmore and Billy Madden, like Wedding Singer. Like, I grew up watching a lot of Adam Sandler, and I can confidently say he has gone way downhill.
Getting those checks, man. He knows what sells. He does like one good movie a year as like a little guest actor, and then he just makes bank.
Yeah, I think my other big takeaway from this was that most people don't like good movies. They just want to be entertained. Yeah. People don't really care if a movie is good or not. When I talk to people who don't, I don't know, # quote unquote love movies, love cinema, the way that we do or whatever, to sound really pretentious for a second.
Let's get pretentious.
When I talk to other people, they're like, oh yeah, that was fun, or I enjoyed it. Like my dad likes anything where the good guys beat the bad guys. If that happens in the movie, he's like totally cool with it. So
I should, like, none of these movies are like sit down and make you work for it movies. They're all like, sit down, you can hang out on your phone and kind of laugh every once in a while and
look up at a cool action scene and then go back to your phone. Like, none of them are like, you need to sit down and just watch this and take it in movies.
Except Captain Phillips punches you in the face.
Yeah. There are, I mean, there are three Best Picture nominees on this list. Flight, Wolf of Wall Street, and Captain Phillips.
There's hope.
But if you look at, I mean, each of those movies has a huge bankable Hollywood star in Denzel, Leo, and Tom Hanks. So, I mean, every single one of them has that kind of appeal of, I mean, if there are people in Hollywood that you can still bank on as far as actors and actresses, those are three people that can do it. Alrighty, next up we have honorable mentions, which is a regular segment that we do, and you can listen back to past episodes where you can figure out what this is about. But the basic gist of it is that this is a list of people that we are nominating. We are nominating people to be on a list of prestige. And I say that because the biggest thing about this test and the biggest thing about this group is, do they pass the blind test? Meaning, if I knew nothing about this movie other than that person's involved in some capacity as a director, producer, writer, actor, actress, would I still be interested in seeing the movie? Like, is that enough to make me go see the movie by itself? And if so, then they can be an honorable mention, but they must be unanimously voted in by all three of us. And they must also have been in or worked on something to that matter of five films. So people like Martin McDonagh, who has Martin McDonagh, that's a bad example because I think he's done four, but who's done like In Bruges, Seven Psychopaths, and Three Billboards Outside of Missouri, even though he's a great director, couldn't be nominated because he's only been in three, I think four. Some people on the list: Steven Spielberg, Steve Carell, Meryl Streep, Andy Serkis, Wes Anderson, Christopher Nolan, Emma Stone. I mean, there's all sorts of people. There's also been people that have been denied, like Harrison Ford, Amy Adams, Guillermo del Toro, and Allison Janney. But tonight, we are going to nominate three new people. So let's get right into our nominees. Jake, who is your nominee for honorable mensch?
Okay. This is someone who has been in, some would say, some of the most iconic TV shows, specifically TV comedy in the history of recent, fairly recent television. I think she has some of the, at least she's in the top 10. I'm making this up. But she has a lot of Emmys, so she's amazing. It's the JLD herself, Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
Okay, sell me a little bit. Give me a resume.
Okay. Seinfeld, one of the greatest
the
shows
best
of all
the best
time.
Television show of all time.
Okay.
Veep, one of the funnier, more recent comedies that she's won the Emmy for, I think like 5 years in a row. And everyone like gave her crap for winning that many years in a row, including myself. And then I watched Veep and I was like, Oh yeah, totally. She's amazing. Yeah, I mean, she makes like guest appearances on 30 Rock. She just like, she knows that she's amazing and like only does a few things here and there and has a really great like humor about oneself that is great. She's in Curb Your Enthusiasm. She's been on Saturday Night Live dozens of times. Arrested Development as Maggie Leiser, the blind lawyer. like,
that
what
is
else
so good.
What else do you want? I mean,
this is an interesting one. I didn't really see it coming. I say yes, because she definitely fits the criteria of, if this person is in this, are you automatically interested in it? If only because she somehow has only been in good things. Yeah. Even The New Adventures of Old Christine is better than it really has any business being for what it is, which is a lame four-camera CBS sitcom. she almost deserves to be on this list for the way she portrays Liz Lemon in the live 30 Rock show.
So fun.
which is just absolutely incredible. I think you're right. She's iconic. She's not in very many movies at all, and I think because of that, she commands even more attention when she is, and it's something that is worth seeing and worth looking into. I have not watched Veep yet. I am greatly looking forward to it. It's on my list of things to do. I believe that Seinfeld is the greatest television show of all time.
She's basically helped like establish what modern television is, and also what like how funny a woman can be on television. As I don't know, I might cut
right.
that
there
out.
There wasn't
but, like
there. No, I understand. There's not there were very few. I mean, from the 1950s to the 1990s, there's Lucille Ball, Mary Tyler Moore, Carol Burnett, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Like, are there any other like women who like could carry a sitcom and be funny, or were allowed to rather? Not that couldn't.
Yeah, if you look at people that we look up to today, like Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, all of those people that have carried a comedy recently, they owe a debt of gratitude to Julia Louis-Dreyfus and all of the other actresses that you just mentioned, Trevor.
Even the obnoxious and not that funny Lena Dunham owns a debt of gratitude to her.
I hate Lena Dunham.
Oh, gosh.
Yes.
Okay, so here's where I'm at. I've watched season one of Veep. Obviously, she's amazing on Seinfeld, and she's great in a lot of things that she's in. The biggest thing I'm wrestling with is... If she's in something, am I interested in it solely because she's in it? And I think Trevor sold me on it with the line of she's not in bad things. Like when you look, like for an actor or an actress, she, when you look at everything that she's been in, she's been amazing in it. Like in the past 20 years, she's been in 4 movies. They are A Bug's Life, in which she's Princess Atta, a small HBO short film called Picture Paris. Then she was in Planes, which actually isn't bad. It's better than Cars. And then she's also in one of the more underrated films of 2013 called Enough Said, which was James Gandolfini's last film. Yes, I would say yes. She's
Yay.
In.
I finally
and sorry
got
about the liberal
in.
Comment. Jake, congrats, and congrats to Julia Louis-Dreyfus.
But mostly, congrats to me.
Congrats to Jake, because Jake deserves all the praise for voting her in. Also, do you guys know that she has cancer?
Yeah, that's why we got to get her in now.
Yeah. I just looked her up just now, like to try and like look through her filmography, and it was like Julia Louis-Dreyfus cancer. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Doesn't her son play college basketball somewhere?
Yeah, that seems kind of familiar to me, saying that.
You're testing my Dreyfus knowledge.
Jake, come on.
I'm sorry.
He plays Northwestern. Oh. He was a walk-on at Northwestern.
Good for him.
Also, did you know that she's married to Reston St. James of Parks and Rec?
Fantastic.
Yes, I did know that.
Yeah. Did you know that according to IMDb... She is in the top 5,000 celebrities.
What? Top 5,000?
Guys, IMDb.
Okay, that's weird when you think about that.
Reston St. James is my favorite Eagletonian architect.
That's a very specific thing to have a favorite in, but yeah, let's go ahead and go with it. While we're at it, Trevor, let's get your nominee for honorable mensch.
I had an actress, and I think I'm going to wait because we have way more men than women on the list, so I don't want to space out the women. Or maybe we should put in more. Actually, here's the thing. Okay, about the 5 things rule, does it have to be... Is it just 5 credits of any kind? Is that the specific here?
Sure.
Okay. This person has only been in 3 movies, but has been in a lot of television shows. I've only seen 2 of the movies... and then there's a bunch of things coming out for her soon, but I think
Amy Schumer.
too much too fast. I think that she, whatever the it factor is that makes some people a star and other people not a star, she definitely has it. And it is someone who we're going to talk about a lot in this podcast, and it's Daisy Ridley.
Ooh.
Ooh, that's
she would. So I think she would be our youngest inductee.
She would. She very much would. Is she younger than Emma Stone? How old is Emma Stone?
Yeah, Daisy Ridley's like 25.
Emma Stone's 29. Daisy Ridley is 25. Yeah, I love how I'm looking up age to verify things. That's great, Cam. Way to go. Okay, so here's... So, let me throw this out there. We have Guillermo del Toro on a pending list. And what I've been considering is that you can either deny somebody or put them on pending. If you put somebody on pending, then the next time they have a movie come up, we reassess and either vote them in or vote them out. To me, if we were going to do that, Daisy Ridley would be on my pending list. Just because I haven't seen her... I mean, yeah, I haven't seen her in enough to really... No, I feel like. I don't know. Jake, where are you? I'm kind of on the fence. Jake, where are you at?
Yeah, I am looking at her IMDb page right now. And while I think she is absolutely incredible as Rey and probably one of the best out of the blue castings of all time, I'm going to say no, just because...
Straight up no?
Straight up no. She hasn't been in enough things. And most of what she's been in has either been like really small or Star Wars related, or that's where I've seen her. And I was not impressed on the Murder for the Orient Express or whatever that movie's called. So I'm going to say no, and we will evaluate after the Star Wars saga.
Okay. We'll put her on the long-term pending.
I'm playing the long game.
Yeah, let's. I think that's fair. The reason we put Guillermo del Toro on pending was because that was like 3 weeks ago and we knew that we were about to do Shape of Water next week. So that's fair. Daisy Ridley, we're sorry. We love you as an actress, but we, as of now, you are not a mensch. Or menchette.
You're on the right track, though.
You are. As far as people that are on good tracks, you are on a better track than most. Okay. I'm going to give you guys I'm going to give you guys an option. Do you guys want an actor or a director?
Actor. We've been doing a lot of directors recently.
Yeah, okay, so I've been trying to stay away from directors too.
Okay. I'll do an actor then. This man is a man who shaped a lot of my high school days, and he played two of my favorite characters in high school through two different series. He's a legend. I don't know how he hasn't won an Oscar. Oscar. Wow, I'm off tonight. Goodness, Cam, get it together. You're introducing a man, a myth, a legend. You can't even do it right. He's a fantastic actor. I mean, everything he's been in is just like he's... Like, there are shorts online that he brings more charisma to than most people. I mean, he's been doing Hollywood films for close to 40 or 35 years now. And he's incredibly talented, and he's electric every time he's on screen. He is none other than Sirius Black and Detective Gordon, Gary Oldman.
Hmm. Yeah, duh. It's Gary Oldman.
I mean, I haven't seen anything he's been in from that's like older than 10 years ago. Or I guess a little bit more whenever starting with Harry Potter and the Batman series. But yeah, he's fantastic. It's almost like shocking that he was like interspersed with each other playing Jim Gordon and Sirius Black. Like, yes. Alternating between those movies.
And then also threw in like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy and like Book of Eli.
Yeah.
Right.
The man is such a dedicated actor that he like lost his own accent and had to go to like speech therapy to get his accent back.
Yeah.
which is a true story.
He can like play compelling like evil but not completely evil bad guy like in his sleep.
Yeah.
Right.
He does it in Book of Eli. He does it in
Air Force
Planet
One,
of the, whatever of the apes. Yeah, he does it in Air Force One. But he has this intriguing nature to when he plays these evil characters, where it's like, yeah, I kind of understand where he's coming from, and he has this depth to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is a mensch officially. Gary Oldman, welcome to the club. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, welcome to the club. And Daisy Ridley, we're sorry, but we're very much looking forward to your next movie, helps at all as a consolation.
Oh, yeah.
So that's all we have for the 8th class of honorable mentions. We will be back doing another one of those here in a little bit. But hopefully we're going to get a list up on the website soon of all of the mentions in their classes so you guys can know. We don't have to repeat it every time. So as we put out our Coco episode last week, the next day, Marvel just went ahead and dropped a massive trailer. And so it's been out for a couple days now, but let's talk Avengers Infinity War and the trailer that they dropped. What was your guys' reaction to seeing this?
Disney could have played this 10 times in front of Coco, and it would have been a better usage of my time.
Gone full Jay-Z and Kanye.
Yeah.
This is the first trailer in literal years that I've watched twice in a row.
Like instant repeat.
Yeah,
done,
yeah, instant
scroll
replay.
Back.
Like run it back. I need to see it again.
Run it back.
It's a perfect trailer because it gets you excited about the movie and it shows you things that happen in the movie, but you have no idea how we're gonna get there. No idea whatsoever. What is gonna lead to these things? Also,
it doesn't contextualize squat.
Right, nothing at all. Also, Captain America with a beard, I am in on that 100%.
Yeah.
It's seriously like exactly what you want in a trailer, exactly what you need. Nothing more, nothing less. I'm in. This is all I want.
Yeah. What's interesting is they did how nowadays they do those. Did you guys see the trailer for the trailer? How they do those?
Yeah.
Most times
it was
like
kind of sweet. It was kind of nice.
Yeah, the trailer for this trailer was amazing. It was like, thank you to the fans for 10 years of awesomeness. Now sit back as we blow your minds. And they did that. Like, this trailer, I mean, you could have shown me like 5 shots and I would have, like, that shot of Spider-Man in the Iron Spider suit, I was in. I was like, I don't need to see anything else. I'll come see this movie. Or like that emotional shot of Robert Downey Jr. at the very beginning where it's like something just went down that's crazy. And I probably have a couple good guesses at what it is, but you know, I'm going to guess somebody dies.
That voiceover at the beginning where it started by Nick Fury, but then carried on by the rest of the characters.
Yeah.
Oh man. That's good stuff. And that's the kind of thing you can only do when you're on the 20th movie of your series.
Can you imagine if they did this trailer but cut with like the Justice League cast?
No. I would just be rolling
wouldn't
my
work.
Eyes immediately.
It wouldn't work at all.
Yeah.
You get just Jason Momoa in there like, yeah!
Two things about the plot here. One, nothing gets the family back together like a good old dispute with some neighbors. And two, this is not going to have a happy ending. That's my grand prediction.
I would be willing to bet that at least, like, I bet a handful, at least 5 Avengers die in this film.
Yeah, Captain America is not surviving this film.
This is Deathly Hallows 1. We're going to end on a death, and then we're going to end on Thanos getting all the Infinity Stones. Like, I legitimately
think
that's what's going to happen.
You think he's going to have all 6 by the end of this movie?
Yes. Oh, for sure.
Okay.
I think this movie ends with him getting the last one, and then it's everybody being like, we're screwed. And then the next movie is like, I would be willing to bet the next, well, So here's because as I'm like, I don't want to do this, but I'm just like kind of mentally piecing things together already. And my biggest curiosity is like what this means for the in-between films of like, because the films that play in between these two are Captain Marvel, which is a set in the 90s. And so that's fine. That's out of the picture. But what does this mean for like Ant-Man and Wasp?
I think it's
also
take
aren't
place,
in the trailer at all.
I think it's going to take place either between Civil War and Infinity War or like before Civil War. Because they did that with Guardians 2. The chronology in the overall universe was not the same as the movie chronology.
Right. And that's, because Marvel did that whole Spider-Man 8 years later thing, but really it's only like 4 years since Avengers.
I honestly Marvel's at the point now where they're like, I don't care, here's a movie. It'll probably give us some contextual information that makes
That's what I was going to say. They've done such a great job of building this universe that they don't have to put them out in chronological order because we're familiar enough with it. We can fit everything in where it needs to go.
Yeah. Not to mention, like, the whole time as I was watching this, there's a lot of scenes set in Wakanda, which is where Black Panther takes place. And I was already hyped for Black Panther, but then it's like, you're doing double marketing now of you have Black Panther trailers and then you have Avengers Infinity War trailers all hyping us up for Black Panther.
Yeah, for sure.
So good on you, Marvel, for planning it that way. But man, this is going to be like, is there any way that this movie's bad? Like, do you guys see people walking out of this being like, that was the worst Marvel film?
The two Russo brothers movies in this series are two of the five best.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be in charge of it if it wasn't good.
I mean, I will say the movie we're about to talk about, Force Awakens, is fantastic and people disliked it. Like, it only has a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes. So, yes, there are going to be people that don't like this, and they are called idiots. So
the most intriguing thing to me is I call it Avengers 3 Infinity War. It's going to end in such a way where we're going to have no idea what's going to happen in 4. Like,
right.
We're going to have no idea how we get out of this, and I think that's going to be fun.
Yeah, and that's the best thing is that there's a lot up in the air, and I think there's a lot to speculate about is like, would they go that far of like killing that many people? If you've read the Infinity War comics, like, you kind of know what I mean by that, but it's like, I think there's a lot of risk that Marvel could take in this movie that would right a lot of issues that a lot of people have with Marvel films. Like, one of my biggest things is that there's no stakes because nobody ever dies. But, I mean, based on this trailer, I think there's some potential for mass carnage.
Yeah. Someone's going to die.
Somebody. Somebody's not going to make it out of this.
And it has to be Cap or Iron Man. It has to be one of them.
True.
It's just the way the story has been built this far, it has to be one of them.
Let's take a poll right now, then. Which of those two do you guys think will die?
Captain.
I think it's Captain doing something that like directly saves Tony Stark.
Yeah.
Because that's who he is.
Oh yeah. I almost think that first shot in the movie or in the trailer of like Tony sitting there like on the verge of breaking down is like post Cap dying.
But guys, I'm getting a little bit emotional about this.
Do we need to just move on, Trevor, and spare you from this? But there's also, like, there's so many other things. Like, Loki's in this trailer. I thought we were kind of done with Loki, but
is
that's
Loki
cool.
Good or bad? He's holding the Tesseract.
He's bad. He's always bad.
Does Loki finally die?
He's not always that bad.
Maybe Tony Stark is crying because Loki dies. And it's like tears of joy. Like, finally.
He's like, thank goodness.
Finally.
Oh, man. Well, that's Avengers Infinity War. That's going to come out May 4th. So we'll probably... That'll be our one-year episode. So we'll celebrate and do an episode that day by doing an episode.
Sounds great.
So we weren't going to do one that day. We were going to take the day off to celebrate, but I will do an episode and celebrate.
All day, man. Hustle all day.
Also, did you guys see Tom Holland spoil the poster on his Instagram story? Have you guys heard about this?
No, but
yeah,
this kid.
I heard about it. I don't think I think it was like a staged spoiler.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
It's hysterical either way. So basically what happens is like Tom Holland is known for spoiling things in movies. And he's on his Instagram story. And he's like, oh, I'm going to open this package that Mark Ruffalo sent me. And he shows the audience, which is like thousands of people, the Avengers Infinity War poster before it's actually released. And then he reads a paper and it says, like, do not show to anyone. Keep confidential. And he immediately like, turns off the phone.
I think they're just leaning into it really hard.
Yeah,
I hope so.
The thing is he's such a great actor. I don't know how he would tell if it was fake or not.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think there's any way we could actually know.
Yeah.
Also, this movie means that we finally get the team up that we've always wanted of Vin Diesel being on the screen with all of these other people. So there we go. Well, you know, Groot. I'm Groot. But that's all we have for Avengers Infinity War. Let's go ahead and get on to reviewing Star Wars The Force Awakens, Episode 7. Oh, I guess they dropped the episodes from the title. That's fine. Whatever, Disney.
No,
thanks a lot.
Still called Episode 7. Whatever they put on there, I reject.
The series in which we got our titling from for this show. Guys, we are 10 days from now. I will be sitting in a theater watching this movie at this very second. Which just blows my mind.
With me.
With Jake. Yeah. And our wives. And
so cool.
But sorry, I heard that there is a short film in front of it. So in front of our 8:30 showing, we may just be starting the film now.
Olaf's Adventure 3.
Yes. Yes. Part 2
out.
They're gonna show later.
I would walk.
Jake just is outside selling his ticket. All right, I got one ticket. Anybody? Yeah. Anybody?
Man, so mad.
It's hard to believe that we are finally 10 days away. Like, they're doing press junkets for this movie now. They're about to start screening it for press next week. Like,
are you guys
seeing
IMAX?
No.
Okay.
I was considering it,
but I'm not sure it needs it.
Trevor, do you have any theaters in Waco that are like reserved seat theaters?
They remodeled one of the AMC screens to be an IMAX screen, and it has reserve seating.
Yeah. See, that's what I went. We have reserve seats.
Oh, praise the Lord.
And that's what I went towards was like, there's an IMAX bias, but by the time like I got online for it, it had already sold out for all of Thursday night and most of Friday. Like, Jake, we could have gone at 5 a.m. on Friday if we wanted to, but
no,
no. So, yeah, I pretty much was just like, there's a theater by my parents' house that I like that has reserved recliner seats, and I got us an 8:30.
That's the kind I went to when I was in Denver a few weeks ago, and it's sort of weird, but kind of interesting.
Weird how so?
It's weird to be in a recliner that doesn't belong to you or someone you know. That generally is a strange thing to me. My knee kept on hitting the button that reclines it. Also, it's fine if you're with someone, but they're kind of in sets of two. So you sort of end up on a love seat with someone you've never met with just an armrest in between you.
It gets very intimate.
Yeah.
But that's why you buy the seats on either side of you as well. And then, you know, you don't have to worry about it.
And then $40 later, you have a home-like experience with a giant screen.
With hundreds of other people around you.
That's right.
Yeah.
Just like
my home.
So
let's go. Just like Jake's home. It's perfect. We're going to actually see the movie there. We're going to do that system where you pay $35,000 and can watch it from home there.
Yes.
But man, let's go ahead and get into Star Wars The Force Awakens leading up to this. Were you guys able to rewatch this in leading up to this review?
Yep.
Cool.
I did not rewatch it. I've seen it.
Gosh darn it,
Trevor. Three times though, I think.
Okay, that's fair.
I for some reason hadn't watched it since seeing it in the theater. I just needed a year to like recover. So
So what was that like? When you left the theater, were you excited and like, what did it live up to that hype when you rewatched it just now?
Yeah. I mean, so here's the thing with The Force Awakens. It's like everything the kid in us goes to the movies for. It's marvelous adventure. It leaves us surprised. It's like you're scared, you're happy. The best thing is it delivers on the promises of the original films, and like they are the epitome of a space western in like every sense of the phrase. Like good versus evil. I know our name is popcorn optional, but this movie is a popcorn movie in the best way possible. It gets a little hate for it.
It took us 31 episodes to get to somebody saying that.
Yeah. It gets hate sometimes for it being like mostly fan service, but I'll take it. Like literally the first words of the film are, "This will begin to make things right," which basically sums up this entire movie. I mean, this movie just puts a smile on your face, but from the acting to the characters, to the score, the plot itself. My wife Lauren looked over at me at one point and she started laughing. I was like, "What?" And she was like, "You're nodding along with the movie." Like I was nodding along in like, "Yeah, yeah." So that just kind of sums up how amazing this movie is.
No, it's great. The people who complain about it being a remake or derivative or whatever, I don't want to hear it, because
I have some thoughts on that in a little bit.
It does a couple things. It's the only time I can think of that reboots a series while still being within the series.
Yeah.
Which is a somewhat remarkable thing that J.J. Abrams did with this.
The reboot-quel?
Yeah. Wait. Okay, we need to pause and file a patent trademark copyright on reboot-quel.
I like it.
You're welcome, okay. Studios.
So yeah, it's just great. It's everything it needed to be. It's everything I wanted it to be. I was thrilled with it. I say that as someone, the episode 4 is my favorite movie of all time, and I think is the perfect summation of escapist blockbuster cinema. And I think that this is right along with it in everything that it does. We get a similar story, but we get the same characters we know. We meet new characters that are fantastic, that are played by great actors and actresses. We have that familiar but not quite the same John Williams score that just perfectly bookends and surrounds everything that's in this. I love this movie. It's so great.
Yeah, I'll be the Debbie Downer for a second and say, okay, when I saw this movie, as soon as the credits started rolling, I lost it, got emotional, and just started crying. I think I started crying when the credits started rolling as well. Like, just something about hearing that music, and like, I never thought I'd hear that music in a new way in a theater again. And so hearing that music and seeing those words in a new, like, I've never felt excitement like that in a theater before.
Also, and like, it's the gap between A Long, Long Time in a Galaxy Far Away and like those words punching in the screen is like the perfect
yes.
amount of time to make you like on the edge of your seat, and then it just punches you in the face with that score and you're just like, oh yes, movies.
Yes, exactly. And it's like, you're a kid again. Like watching that part, I'm like, I'm 5 years old. I don't remember how old I was when I first watched these, but it's like I had that feeling again of hope that I was going to be transported to a new Star Wars story and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And that's why this movie is so great, is because it gives us hope in the series once again. And yes, it copies a lot of Episode 4. And I will be the first to admit that that's a major fault, in that if you're going to fault this movie for anything, it's that it's too much like the original. Mm-hmm. But the reason, and there are a bunch of people out there, I remember when this movie came out, of like, why does everybody seem to like this movie over the prequels? And the biggest reason is that this movie has characters that we fall in love with once again. There is not a single character outside of Obi-Wan in those prequels that we like whatsoever. In this movie, there are all the returning players, Han Solo, Leia. At the end, we get Luke for 5 seconds. But then on top of that, there's Daisy Ridley as Rey, which is just mind-blowingly amazing. John Boyega, Adam Driver, Oscar Isaac. There's BB-8. We get returning with the characters in this movie are just on another level from other movies. And it's not even because we already are in love with Han Solo and Leia and Chewie. The new characters that are introduced make us fall in love with them again. Like, even the bad guy in this movie, you're like, I'm on board with Kylo Ren. Like, I want, like, he's evil, but it's like, he's still awesome.
Yeah.
And the relationship between Ren and General Hux is something that we never got from what Lucas did. It was always Vader and just Vader.
Yeah. And then there's like other like fun things like Snoke. And for the first time, it's like, I wasn't there at no point when this movie was initially out, was I tired of seeing it or talking about it. Like, it's that movie that it's like, I'll talk about it with anybody. I'll talk theories. I'll talk like anything. It's not like, you know, you see a movie and you're like, that was really fun. And then like a couple of days later, you're like, it was great at the time, but now I'm kind of annoyed of it because it's just getting talked about. Like, this was that movie I just couldn't get enough of. And that's for me, that's a special feeling that I'm going to hold on to, because that's something I have never felt in a movie like when I saw this movie again.
Yeah.
So
that's like going
JJ,
off of,
well done.
Going off of that, I think that's why I look past the rehashing and like the repeat and stuff. Like, first off, history does repeat itself. Like, you can make fun of the Death Star thing, but like, the United States is currently in another nuclear standoff with a communist nation. The Nazi party's on the rise, and we just cut taxes for the rich for trickle-down economics. What year is it? So I can look past, like, oh, well, the Empire built another Death Star, blah, blah, blah. It's like, of course. It blew up a planet. Why would they not build a bigger, better one?
That swallows stars.
Yeah, really the only like rehashing here besides that whole Death Star thing is like character traits, which is what made us fall in love with the original characters. And so I'm totally cool with them taking character traits and mixing them with traits from other characters to create new characters.
There's a couple small things I think that they could have done differently, like things as simply as like Jakku not being a desert planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you make it a different kind of terrain, you don't quite have that same crossover with Luke. We also don't quite know the significance of Jakku yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's going to be some more to tell there, but like, I think a couple small things like that would have not that it needed to happen, but I think it would have taken care of a few of those issues.
Yeah.
And that's my frustration, is like, there are things, there's no significant, well, there is actually, like, and I go back and forth on this, because I'm like, there's no significance between it being on a sand planet, but it's like, we as Star Wars fans see that sand planet and are instantly brought back to Tatooine. Like, right. it's an easy callback, and it, in some ways, it feels cheap, but at the same time, and like, this is one of my biggest things that, Jake, you had hit on the fact of like there being fan service-y stuff in this film. And there is a lot of fan service-y moments, but all of them are so welcome. Like, yeah, I relish in those. I want those moments, and I'd be frustrated if they weren't there. It's a good amount of fan service, and the fan service we do get isn't like annoying things, or like if at some point, like the ultimate way that this could have gone downhill is if at one point they're like, well, that senator from Naboo, Jar Jar, ruined everything. It's like that would have been fan service in the wrong way. Mm-hmm. This is callbacks in a positive, like tying into past emotions that we've already felt, which is, I think some people think that as cheap and like a way of cheating and getting us to feel certain things, but it's like, it's never done in a like wink at the camera kind of way.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about, here's a thing to kind of compare this with the, not so much New Hope specifically, but the previous saga. And this is going to be very spoilery. So if you haven't seen The Force Awakens, figure it out, go see it. It's great. I know that the obvious comparison is for Rey is Luke, but I think that you could also draw a lot of parallels between Luke and Kylo Ren. Mm-hmm. As Kylo Ren being the anti-Luke, like the one who succumbs to the dark side and kills his father, just as the Emperor was trying to get Luke to do at the end of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
So I think that there's a little bit, it's not quite as simple as people pretend like it is.
Well, I think that like he's the version of Luke if Luke had, like you said, gone down that path, which is a very like interesting way to frame a character, because people have always been like, that's one of the biggest things from that original series is like, what if Luke had gone down the dark side? What would that have been like? And we see that now, like that's Kylo Ren. Kylo Ren is, what if he had gone down the dark side? That's what it is. And that's exactly how it plays out. And that's pretty cool. Like that's a cool thing to explore. And okay, so on that same line, did you guys notice that we don't see whose hand ignites the lightsaber when Kylo kills Han?
Yeah, I've heard this theory. I've read about this. I think it's just one of those things where you are to assume that it's Kylo Ren. Like, I don't understand what the purpose of Han doing that to himself would be.
Right.
The purpose would be that, okay, so what if Kylo Ren is a double agent trying to bring down Christmas from within, if you get what I'm saying. And if Han, because like the dialogue and the back and forth between them is like, I don't want to do this, but like I need to do this to like prove that like I'm part of that. And
no.
There's a pretty big body count for a double agent. That's a. And also, why doesn't he, I don't know, why does he fight Finn and Rey in the middle of nowhere if he's a double agent?
Well, Trevor, I hadn't worked out everything, okay?
When he's saying he doesn't want to do this, he's saying, like, he's mixed feelings and, like, he knows what he needs to do, but he doesn't want to do it. And, like, that's just him battling the light inside of him.
But that's a very Jedi thing for him to say. Like, the dark side is full of emotion. The Jedi are full of analytical logic.
Well, like, what if, I mean, I could subscribe to some theories that Kylo Ren is not too far gone.
Yeah.
I could get on board with some of that kind of thinking.
Do we want to place bets on who ends up being the villain and who ends up being the hero in this series? Because
no.
I would fully be on board. Not on board, but I could fully see it happening where there's a flip and Rey ends up being evil and Kylo ends up being good.
I feel like they've made us hate Kylo Ren too much.
But that's the whole thing. Star Wars is all about redemption. Like, look at the original trilogy. It's all about the redemption of Darth Vader. And that's something that we would get in Kylo Ren.
Yeah, we might get that. Rey is too good. She's better than Luke.
But she hasn't really encountered evil. Like, she's encountered an apprentice of evil, but she hasn't encountered evil in the form of Snoke.
No, she doesn't have the emotions that Luke or Anakin did, I don't think. I think that she's the one that's gonna bring balance to the Force.
She doesn't have the anger, but she has the like love that they did, which is also like as a Jedi a very dangerous thing. Like, look at what that did to Anakin. I don't know. It's just one of those things that I'm like, I could see it happening. Do I want it to happen? No, but I could very easily see it happen.
Also, this is not that this means a lot, but Star Wars is not, well, it sort of is, but not quite that. It's not an incredibly twisty kind of thing. And that's not really the MO of...
Wait. There's the biggest twist of all time in Empire Strikes Back.
Okay, but it's not a twist so much as it's something we didn't know. It's not like the blind girl climbs over the wall and ends up she's in like 1960 or not like whatever 2004 instead of like 1862. You know, like it's not like
shout
an M. Night
Shyamalan
kind of thing. So I mean,
but,
I think of
it
those
is,
as
like,
two different
completely,
kinds of thing.
But that completely like us finding out. So spoilers for Empire Strikes Back.
No.
Back from 1981 or 1980. But when you find out that Darth Vader is Luke's dad or his father, like that completely recontextualizes everything that's come before it. And it completely reshapes the entire universe. Like that's the greatest twist of all time, if you ask me.
Right.
So... No, Star Wars isn't like there's a lot of times where Star Wars
I guess,
is
I'll say
straightforward, but
maybe not like things that completely change direction of characters. Like it doesn't do like a 180 in any of the characters' trajectories. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean I guess like, you like know it, that Anakin is like gonna be evil from the beginning.
Right. And,
but then I mean, he comes back and is good.
Right. A lot of the issues with, as a quick aside, a lot of the issues with the prequel trilogy is that we know what the ending is while we're watching them.
But what's funny about that is that the ending of that trilogy is easily the best part of that trilogy.
Right. But yeah, I don't feel, all that to say, I don't feel like a complete about face is coming from anyone. That doesn't seem to be the MO.
What about
of
from Luke?
J.J. Abrams or Rian Johnson? There, go ahead.
Well, I mean, no, like it's on the same line as what you were just saying, but like, do you guys think that Luke is evil, or that he has dabbled in the dark side at least?
Yes.
I think that Luke has gotten into some weird stuff while he's on the island.
You're
he's
lonely.
Just been hanging out with porgs all day.
You don't have much to do. Are we just speculating or are we talking about Force Awakens?
We're speculating now. Okay. We're in full speculation mode. Yeah.
Okay.
We could reel it back in, I guess.
Yeah. Come on. This whole episode we've been chasing rabbits and then reeling it back in.
Can we talk about how Luke is the? I mean, you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. It's the only time I can think of where the main character of a movie series becomes a MacGuffin for an entire film in the series.
I think that's taking it from a another Star series. Wrath of Khan.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I could see that. But Khan is not...
I mean, yeah, arguably Khan's not the lead of the series. It's Kirk, but... No, it's... What was your initial reaction when you saw that in theaters, like the whole time of like waiting for Luke, and then it's like him for 5 seconds at the end? Were you guys let down by that?
No, I think that's exactly what it needed to be.
Yeah, because I've read some stuff that J.J. Abrams said. He said they played with the story with like having him show up halfway through. But he said every time Luke is there, the story is about Luke. And I think he's right. I don't think you can... Anything that Luke is in is about Luke because it's his story.
Right.
Like all the way through, it's his story.
It's the Skywalker saga for a reason.
Are we in spoilers?
Yeah, we've...
I announced spoilers.
I think Trevor...
This has
been
a disaster.
We're all over the place. I mean, there's just so many things to talk about, right?
Yeah, so, my big thing is whoever found Daisy Ridley and John Boyega deserves all of the casting Oscars, because holy crap.
There should be an Oscar for casting.
Yeah, the fact that there isn't really surprises me. Their characters fit perfectly with our old favorites and simultaneously embrace and challenge all of the cliches that a hero in this kind of film should be. I mean, it's perfect. We already spoiled it, but that Han Solo scene, guys, Harrison Ford is a minch in this movie. I don't care what you say.
and Harrison Ford, the first deny from the honorable mentions,
which still hurts me. But
this is his only good movie in this millennium.
Blade Runner.
Okay. Yes, that wasn't out when we did the Minches. That wasn't out when we did the Minches. You guys know I love Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah. So
yeah, but I don't think that changes my decision at all. But yeah. Did you guys see that death coming? Was that something that you guys were ready for?
Oh, I was not ready. Not ready at all.
Yeah. So spoiler alert, Han Solo dies, killed by Kylo Ren.
No.
We've already said that. But
his son.
I knew he was going to die. He had to die. He wanted to die before the end of Return of the Jedi. So, like, I knew that that was, like, part of Harrison Ford coming back, was Han Solo was going to die. And the moment he stepped on that bridge, I was like, well, here we go. Here we go.
Yeah.
And I think it's an important thing for the character that it had to be his son that killed him.
Yeah.
Because what we see is, like, so many other people trying to kill him and no one can.
And lets go of everything. Like, all the walls come down. I mean, it's just, that's like the most emotional and real human moment we have with Han Solo over the span of 4 movies.
Yeah. Well, it's that moment that we all know Han has inside of him, but he's always kind of afraid to show. It's that, like, sincere, caring side of him where it's like every movie it's like he's selfish, and then he kind of does something that's like a little bit less selfish, but at the same time there's still kind of that selfish motivation in there. But like, he's that guy who you're like, everything he does is a selfish guy, but deep down you're like, I know that he's got a selfless bone in there. And this is that like parent move of like, I'm gonna sacrifice myself for my kid.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just,
it's the same thing as the, you're all clear, kid. Now let's blow this thing and go home.
Yeah.
It's the same glimpses of who he really is.
Yes. It's the, I love you, I know moment. That's goodness. So in rewatching this, something I found interesting was how emotional I got when Carrie Fisher came on screen.
Oh man, I can't even like look at a picture of her.
It's insane. Like I've been trying to, cause ever since they released, like the featurette, I think it was the featurette that they released after like D23, where she talks in it and she's like, you know, Star Wars is all about family. Gosh. I mean, even as I'm sitting here, I'm getting chills. I've been trying to figure out ever since, but like, what is it about her that creates that emotion out of everybody?
It's her character. Well, part of it is, I mean, she was an amazing actress. The weight she carried with that character, but Princess Leia is the toughest, most consistent, most unwavering character in this series. She always knows what the end goal is and isn't afraid of anything. And I think that mixed with her performance in that role is really what brings that weight to it.
Yeah. I think also Carrie Fisher is just such a unique individual in terms of like an artist, an actress, that she is just able to 100% become that character. Like she isn't playing Princess Leia, like she is Princess Leia and just like oozes charisma and charm and emotion. And yeah, I mean, I think just on screen, she is so small, like in stature, but just commands the screen like very few other people do.
Right. I mean, the very first time she interacts with the other main characters, she says, "Aren't you short for a stormtrooper?" And it just explains like who her character is.
Yeah.
Not scared of anything.
Yeah. And this movie came out back in 1977. Like, that's a thing that happens in movies a lot nowadays. I mean, just look at like The Hunger Games as an example. But like in 1977, we didn't have characters like that.
Yeah.
And so that was special, like to see Carrie Fisher on screen doing that. And especially like, I want to say that she was like 19 or 20 when they filmed The Force Awakens.
Crazy.
Which is just insane to think about the poise that she had on screen when she did that. Like, as that young of a person to be able to hold herself on screen with all of that talent in the room. Oh, man. That's going to be hard. That's going to be an interesting aspect of Last Jedi.
Yeah, it's gonna be tough to watch her, definitely.
So, but supposedly they didn't change anything from her performance.
Good. Why do you guys? Okay, so this is a question that's a little off topic, but I think an interesting discussion. Have you guys seen Rogue One?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you like it?
Yes.
Yes,
a lot.
I like Rogue One a lot, and I don't understand the hate.
Do you like it better?
You don't like it, do you?
Do you like it better than The Force Awakens?
In different ways. It's so
it's
different.
It's close for me. It depends on the day.
Hmm. Okay.
I would say, and this is going to be an interesting thing to come back and talk about after Last Jedi, because I'm one of those people that thinks that in retrospect, Last Jedi makes Force Awakens better.
I think you're right.
I think I like Force Awakens as a whole better, purely because of the characters. I think story-wise, Rogue One presented something new and a different like look within that Star Wars universe that we hadn't gotten.
Rogue One is great because it tells the detailed story of an event we're familiar with but don't know anything about.
Yeah.
Jake, what do you think about Rogue One?
So, I think it's fine. They're both Star Wars films with a female lead, which is awesome, but I think the reason Force Awakens is better than Rogue One is because it follows an obligation of basic storytelling, which is the main character must act and like their choices impact the story, not be acted upon by the story. Like, Force Awakens isn't perfect, but like Rey is relatable. We see her making choices, imposing her will on those around her, which redirects the story itself. Whereas like Rogue One is the complete opposite. The first two thirds of the film have very little consequence on the final battle. And we don't see Jyn, I think that's her name, make any significant choices until the end, which lacks weight due to the lack of buildup. So,
I logically understand what you're saying, but it had weight for me. I don't know why, but I mean it did. And I think it's the relationship between Cassian and Jyn that carried the most weight for me, and how their relationship evolves.
Yeah. I didn't like Felicity Jones or the guy who played Cassian. I didn't think either of them were very good.
But Alan Tudyk as K2SO.
Yeah, that was great. But that was a robot that was in the movie for like 10 minutes. So,
to speak more generally, I think that Force Awakens and Rogue One are each among the four best movies in the whole saga.
Okay, so let's put this out there. Trevor, rank the Star Wars films.
Okay, it's 4, 5, then some kind of tie between Force Awakens and Rogue One. Probably Force Awakens ahead, then Rogue One, then Return of the Jedi, then 3-2, 3-1-2. Sorry, I think 2 is the worst.
By far. Yeah. Jake, do you have, is your order different than that?
That's about right, but I would have Rogue One in between the prequels and the original and Force Awakens.
Yeah, I think mine's 4-5-6-7, Rogue One, 3-1-2.
Yeah, I think that's mine too.
I think that's about right.
I think for me, Return of the Jedi doesn't hold up as well.
I don't
as
get
the other
back.
Ones.
I don't get the backlash on Return of the Jedi. It's, like, explain this.
I think,
like, what am I missing?
I think if it doesn't close the saga, it's not as good.
Why?
Because it just doesn't. I don't know. There's something.
I'm not trying to be like confrontational or be
right,
like prove
right.
It.
No, I understand.
But it's just like
I've
never understood people who dislike it.
When I was younger, it was my favorite. Because it ended the saga and finished everything and the bad guys were beaten. But I think it feels so, the ending feels so inevitable the whole time. I guess I don't know. It's still
in terms
really
of like
good
guys win, bad guys
right,
lose.
Right. Yes. There's not a lot of, you're not really worried about what's going to happen. Whereas 5 broke ground in a lot of ways, but by being like, yeah, you know how good you felt about the last one? Everything is crap now. So find a way to deal with it.
That's fair. Okay, that's probably one of the better ways I've heard that framed. Sorry, I didn't mean to come off as like, prove it. I was I've never understood it. And so I wanted someone who can articulate as well as you do.
That's been an evolution for me. 6 has gone, it gradually goes down the list in my rankings the more I watch
Ewoks?
All of them. I don't have a huge problem with the Ewoks. It's not the Ewoks.
Sometimes that song that they sing at the end will just randomly get stuck in my head out of nowhere. Like I'll be at work and I'll just be like, tap, tap. Dep, 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 dep. And I'll be like, I haven't watched this movie in 10 years. What is wrong with me?
It's not a bad song.
It's catchy.
It's catchy.
It'll get
you. It's not as good as the Mos Eisley Cantina song.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Or as good as Jabba the Hutt's song at the beginning.
That's the only Family Guy joke that I think is like super funny. The Star Wars Family Guy thing and that song's playing in the background. They're like, and then the band is like, oh, we take requests, any requests? And then he leans away from the mic and goes, play that same song. Oh, okay, same song. Here we go. And just keeps playing it over and over again.
Oh, man, that's so pretty funny. Good. That's a good bit.
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the question that I feel like is most talked about coming out of this movie. Who, based on this movie, do you guys think Rey's parents are? I have a theory.
I've thought a lot about this, and I don't really have an answer.
Okay. My theory is that the voices that she hears when she touches the lightsaber are that of Obi-Wan.
Right.
And it makes sense with them doing Obi-Wan films coming up. I think that in those films they'll explain it, but I feel like she has to be a descendant of Obi-Wan because every trilogy has kind of been this like Skywalker versus Kenobi thing. And even like in a way you could say that Luke is a representative of Obi-Wan because he trained under him.
Also, she has a British accent.
Oh.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
I will say the stuff that people think that she's Luke's daughter, that's silly.
Yeah. I can't see
that
happening.
Easy. It's not that easy.
Okay, and the most interesting part of, like, they have to, like, her and Kylo have to know each other is, like, when they're like, he got away with some girl, and Kylo Ren turns and he's like, what girl? And it's like, he knows. But then at the same, like, okay, so here's where that
kind
of goes.
Does he know because he like knows her from when they were little kids, or does he know because he knows her from interrogating people with his Seth mind tricks?
I think she might just be some random kid that was being trained by Luke, and after the Kylo Ren craziness happened, maybe she was like the only one that survived, and Luke just like dumped her somewhere that he could never be found, or she could never be found.
Wouldn't that be the funniest thing for her to like not have any parentage?
That's the kind of thing that I'm leaning towards. I don't think we've met her parents yet.
If
I had to guess one thing,
the case, I would say there is a chance of her going to the dark side then in that situation because of the whole Skywalker prophecy, whatever.
Oh, but so when you say the Skywalker prophecy, you mean bringing balance to the Force?
Yeah.
So I have a completely different, like, my take on that is that Luke is trying to fulfill that prophecy. Okay, I don't want to get into this. Never mind. We'll talk more about this.
We can talk a lot about what it means to
bring balance to the Force.
Yeah, and I think it's speculating a lot on like what... I'll say it like this. I think it's speculating a lot on what kind of Jedi Luke is in The Last Jedi.
Yes.
And then I'll leave it at that. But, gosh, man, what a, like... moment if we were to find out that Rey's parents, like, after all these like theories of people just speculating on who her parentage is, if it's just like, it's just two random people.
That would be great.
It would also be
midichlorians.
Yeah, it would also be really funny. Gosh, I'm gonna be curious if they ever bring up midichlorians again.
No way they will.
So I'm curious if I lost my train of thought. I'm curious if Rey, if she ends up, okay, never mind, whatever. It's just a weird, like, it's just such a, like, interesting dynamic that they've created. And it's funny because, like, they keep calling it, like, you know, we may take a break from the Skywalker saga. And it's like, they keep saying the Skywalker saga, yet the main character is, I don't know. Is there a chance that Rey is Han and Leia's, or like Han's daughter or Leia's daughter outside of each other?
I don't know.
Like if Han has a daughter with someone else, or Rey or Leia has a daughter with someone else?
I don't know. I mean, yeah, there's a chance.
In that case,
there's a chance of everything we've said so far.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we could really get into that.
I don't think that Rey has to be a Skywalker for it to still be called the Skywalker saga. Because it's still about Luke. The story has always been about Luke.
But,
it always will be until he dies.
It's poetic. It's all gotta go together.
Guys. It's poetry. It rhymes like poetry.
Do you guys have anything else to say about Force Awakens? I feel like we've speculated more than we reviewed.
I guess this is a decent stopping point for our Last Jedi preview podcast.
Yeah, yes, honestly,
I'm gonna retitle this Last Jedi preview. I mean, we got into what we like, but I mean, like, so here's my thing is, like, let's say we reviewed this film 2 years ago when this movie came out. I'd be willing to bet that a good portion of our review would have been talking about our thoughts on theories. And to me, it's like, that's just as much a review as anything else, because it's talking about where the movie leaves us and what the movie's trying to get us to think.
Yeah.
Because I think there's very, like, Disney is very good at sleight of hand in a way of look over here and then trying to get us to then come back to a different place.
Yeah. I mean, I would say just the amount of time we've spent talking about what we want to happen just shows how great and inspiring this movie is.
Yeah. Yep.
Honorable mensch, J.J. Abrams.
Honorable mensch, J.J. Abrams. Honorable mensch, we haven't even talked about Andy Serkis as Snoke. The fact that Andy Serkis is even in this series. Goodness.
He's everywhere. He does everything.
And denied honorable mensch Harrison Ford.
Still.
Sorry,
still
Jake.
Hurts.
Still hurts. I know.
It's Harrison Ford.
Alrighty, well, that's all we have. Do we want to do reviews? Are we all A pluses on this movie?
I am an A minus.
Ooh.
I'm a BB-8 out of BB-8.
There we go.
Also, quick aside, BB-8 is great, but a tad bit overrated. I need him to save about a million more people before he's on that R2-D2 level.
That's
the
fair.
The true MVP of Star Wars is R2-D2.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay,
well,
so
that's all that we have.
The reason I give this an A- instead of an A+ is because of that. The scenes like R2-D2. It's like, R2-D2 has been asleep since Luke left and he will never wake up again. And then R2's like, oh, we're all together? Well, this is a great time to wake up. Things like that are just so perfect plot holy that it's like, you know, you're like, ah, it's Star Wars. But then it's like, okay, hold on. That's a big time plot hole.
But my thought on that has always been like, Luke is so powerful that he reawoke him or laid some sort of plan to where once he felt, because I mean, you know that he felt Han die in some way through the Force. And he kind of like made it to where he could be found.
Yeah, maybe.
I think.
Yeah, I think it's something along those lines.
And that's why I think Last Jedi, in retrospect, makes this movie better, because it'll explain things like that.
Yeah, maybe.
So that's all we have for our review, for our speculation review of Star Wars The Force Awakens. We're going to review Last Jedi come 2 weeks from now, so I'm pretty hyped about that. That's gonna be awesome. But yeah, let's go ahead and get to our content of the week. Jake, what is your content of the week?
Yeah, mine is super random, but we've just randomly been watching through New Girl on Netflix again, which the first few seasons are fantastic. I haven't watched the last two, but I think it's one of the better kind of ensemble comedies to come on television for a while. So New Girl, it's on Netflix. It's like really funny, especially in season two, once they kind of really figure out how to use all the characters. At like season three, there's some hiccups that, you know, maybe they overcome. I'll keep you updated. But yeah, New Girl.
I don't want to spoil anything, but I've watched all of it and I like it.
Well, that's
fine. Sorry, were you done? I don't want to cut you off.
No, I'm done.
Okay. Mine is going to be Star Wars related. It is a video game that is quite a throwback. Actually, I've got two Star Wars video games. If you have a Nintendo 64 laying around your house like I do, then you should find yourself a copy of Shadows of the Empire, which tells you a nice little tie-in Star Wars story that doesn't follow the main saga, but takes you to familiar places with familiar people.
Mm-hmm.
And then another Star Wars video game, only slightly newer than that, is the Xbox game Knights of the Old Republic.
Yes.
Which is a role-playing game where you get to be a Jedi. Well, I guess you can choose to be Sith also if you make the wrong decisions. Because
it's
no
their
one
decisions,
would intentionally
man. It's their decisions.
No one would intentionally become a Sith. We don't have to talk about that anymore. But Knights of the Old Republic is a really fun RPG. You get to go around the galaxy, you learn some of the old mythology of Star Wars, which may or may not be canon anymore because of Disney and their streamlining of all that,
legends.
But that's fine. It's legend stuff and it's interesting. It actually is whatever that's called, retroactive playability, reverse compatibility. You can play it on the Xbox One, whatever they call it.
You can play
it on your
iPhone.
You can get Knights of the Republic. Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
You can play it on your iPhone.
Yeah.
Just find a way to play Knights of the Old Republic because it's a great, great video game.
Man, what if Rian Johnson's trilogy is a Knights of the Old Republic trilogy?
So okay with that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
And then he directs the first one. Zack Snyder directs the second one.
Why? Why? Why do you have to ruin it?
The idea got thrown out of like, now Rian Johnson's like creating this, but is he directing all three? And instantly I was like, they're going to bring in Zack Snyder. But anyways, my jokes are not landing tonight. I apologize to our audience. I'm going to recommend a book that I started listening to this week, and I haven't gotten all the way through it yet, but it's a collection of short stories and Star Wars related. It's called From a Certain Point of View, and it is 40 stories told around Star Wars A New Hope from different perspectives. So, like, for example, there's a one on Boba Fett that's narrated by Jon Hamm. And it kind of tells the events of that from that of Star Wars A New Hope from Boba Fett's perspective. It's like little stories and like, okay, so imagine what those two stormtroopers who, these aren't the droids you're looking for, stormtroopers. Imagine what it was like. Did they ever find those? Like, that's a short story in there of like them trying to figure out like, well, where are these droids? And so there's a lot of really cool little stories that are pretty fun. You can either buy it online or you can listen to it on Audible.
It sounds like, from what you're saying to me, that I must get the audiobook instead of the regular book if Jon Hamm is telling me stories.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I immediately went to that one because I was like, I want to hear Jon Hamm tell a story. Can we talk about how Jon Hamm doesn't get enough work? Like, does he choose to not get enough work, or is that like a...
I think he chooses exactly what he wants to do.
I think he's too beautiful.
Mm. If I had a 5 o'clock shadow like that...
He can wear a suit. I tell you what, yes. He can wear a suit.
Amen. Yeah.
Well, if you've enjoyed listening to us tonight, you can find more of our episodes on iTunes. You can go to our website, learn more about us, find our episodes on there at popcornoptional.com. If you want to interact with us a little bit, get our On the Second Thoughts, you can go find us on Twitter and Facebook at Popcorn Optional. My name is Cameron Salina. You can find me online at 321 Cami Time. Jake, where can we find you online?
JakeBrown.tv. Trevor?
I am at Turbo Trevor on Twitter and Instagram.
And if you've liked listening to us, go to iTunes, rate us, and recommend us to a friend. That's the best way for us to grow. And we would love to reach more people. So thanks for listening. We will see you guys next week. And until next time, pop, pop.
Bye.